All right. Well, I'm going to ask you to turn in your Bibles, if you have a Bible handy, to Mark 5. We're going to be in studying at verse 21. I will have them all on the screen today, but if you're on your phone, your screen might be kind of tiny, so it might be hard to see. I want to start this morning by mentioning a dream that I had on Monday of this past week. I had this dream, and the Lord showed me a name for this time that we're in, this coronavirus pandemic, this season that we're in. And the name that I saw was the Great Interruption. The Great Interruption. And the sense I got was the magnitude of this name was similar to the name the Great Depression. So I saw the Great Interruption. I visually saw it, but it had this weight. It had this heaviness as the Great Depression of the 1920s and 30s. And I woke up that morning and I looked in the dictionary for some definitions of interruption, and these were a few that I found. It said to stop or to hinder by breaking in. A stoppage or a hindering of an activity for a time. To break in the continuity of something. And I thought, wow, that certainly describes this. This disease has certainly broken in and caused an interruption. It caused a disruption in our life. But then the next thing that I heard in the dream was, the next thing I heard in the dream was the Lord was saying, I want you to look at Jesus and to see how he responds to interruption. And it was the strangest sense. The Lord saying, look at Jesus. I want you to pay attention to Jesus and how he responded to interruption. Then I heard, and how will the church respond to this interruption? Then in the dream, I saw a couple of scriptures. The Lord showed me a couple of scriptures. And these scriptures are ones that deal with Jesus being interrupted and how he dealt with it. And then in the morning, I could only remember one of the two. In the dream, I saw two scriptures. In the dream, by morning, I could only remember one. So that's the one that we're going to look at today. But as we look at this scripture, again, I want us to remember to think about how will the church respond to this interruption? And how can we do this in a way that's a little bit outside of the box? Because I believe that what the dream was saying, what these scriptures that we're going to look at today are saying, is we have to not let the interruption stop ministry. We have to not let the interruption stop the kingdom from advancing and the kingdom from coming. And what I'm seeing right now largely across the church, the global church, is there's a few people standing in empty buildings talking to a computer, and there's not much kingdom advancement happening. I can't speak for everywhere. I'm just where I have observed. And so as we go through these scriptures, then I want us to begin to also think outside of the box of how we can continue to advance the kingdom even while we're in this desperate time of quarantine. So let me begin reading from Mark 5. Oh, it jumped ahead on me. Mark 5, verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around to the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding around you," his disciples answered. And yet you can ask who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, and she told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told them, "Don't be afraid, just believe." The scene starts in the middle of a crowd. There's a crowd pressing in around Jesus, and so ministry is already taking place. Jesus is no doubt busy. He's teaching. Maybe he's already healing some people. But he's surrounded by a crowd, and he's already got a ministry time taking place, if you will. And then in the next two verses, we see the first interruption. So into this busy, crowded ministry scene, we see this man, Jairus, who is identified as a synagogue ruler. He comes and he begs Jesus, "Will you please come and pray for my daughter? She's dying." And Jesus doesn't seem the least bit bothered by the interruption and goes with the man. So this is the first interruption. The man comes and he interrupts this scene with Jesus in the crowd. Then the next few verses. "And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse." Isn't it interesting that Mark has included these details in his accounting of this event? This probably means that this woman's condition was well known. Notice her name is not given, just her condition. So this had become her identity. Her name maybe had even been forgotten by anyone but her family. She was simply known as the woman with the issue of bleeding. Now, of course, we know that from Jewish tradition, this flow of blood would have made her perpetually unclean according to Jewish laws. She would have also caused anyone that she touched to become unclean. Even a chair that she sat on would become unclean, and then anyone else who sat on that chair would become unclean. Again, according to Jewish traditions. Her illness would have left her socially and spiritually cut off from all of society. Talk about social distancing. This woman wasn't being asked to social distance to prevent a spread of sickness. This woman was forced into a type of social distancing by the traditions of the day and her illness. She would not have been able to participate in any of the normal life of the Jewish culture, and she certainly would not have been able to participate in Jewish worship at the temple. We also see this inability of the doctors to do anything to help her. And she had spent all the money that she had with doctors, and yet she grew worse. As I was studying this passage this week, I had to draw some parallels. You can't push them too far, but I had to draw some parallels to the time that we're living in. We're filled now with people who are sick. They're contagious. You can't go near them. You can't touch them. You can't even get within 6 feet of them. And the doctors don't know what to do. But continuing into verses 27... and 28. "When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, 'If I touch his clothes, I will be healed.'" Approaching from behind would have been appropriate for her, but for her to touch him would have been completely unacceptable. According to their tradition, again, she's an unclean person. If she comes up and she touches anyone, she now makes them unclean. So just from that perspective alone, it would have been completely out of bounds for her to come up and touch Jesus. And then also for a woman to touch a man, especially a man who's not part of her family. It would have been one thing if it was her brother, her husband, her father, and uncle. But for her to touch a strange man, again, completely out of bounds. But of course, for her part, this was an extreme act of faith. Knowing the doctors couldn't help anymore, but moving toward trusting God in a radical, different, higher level way. So here's what I think is interesting. The rest of the crowd, remember, it started the scene by describing that there's a whole crowd of people there. They're all pressing into Jesus. And we know from other scenes in the Gospels that many of them would demand a sign. Do something. Do a miracle. We want to see. We want to know that you are the Messiah. Do something for us. So the rest of the crowd is waiting for Jesus to do something. This woman, in an extreme act of faith, she reaches out and she touches Jesus. So this was an extreme act of faith on her part, while everyone else stood and watched. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. I love how immediately she knew she had been healed. Jesus didn't even pray for her. This was all kingdom power. This was the kingdom breaking into her present reality. Verse 30, at once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around to the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" Don't you love that Jesus realized power had gone out from him more so than he realized somebody touched him? I mean, it's possible if she only touched the hem of his garment, there's no way he could have felt it. But he notices that power has gone out from him. And so Jesus begins to look for who did this, who touched him, because he knew that a kingdom moment was at hand. Going into verse 31, it says, "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask who touched me?" His disciples, of course, try to dismiss this as simply being, look at the size of the crowd. But I also have to wonder if his disciples were thinking to themselves, we got to keep Jesus on track here. If he gets interrupted again, he's never going to make it to Jairus' house. Verse 32, but Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Isn't that interesting? For me, this is my favorite verse in this passage. Jesus doesn't let this interruption go. You see, Jesus knew that this was more than just a casual bump from the crowd. Some argue that Jesus already knew who it was that had touched him, and he wanted her to exercise her faith by coming forward. But because power had already gone out from Jesus, she had already demonstrated her faith. This was already an act of faith. It was her faith that drew the power out from Jesus. Therefore, I think the real issue here is that Jesus simply wanted to publicly affirm this woman and affirm her faith in front of the crowd. Given how she would have been on the very outskirts of society, Jesus wanted to affirm her faith. But we also see this now as Jesus' second interruption. This is an interruption to his interruption. Remember, he was in the crowd, and then Jairus said, "Come pray for my daughter," and so he begins to go with her, and now the woman stops him on that journey, and Jesus now stops and gives his attention to the woman, becoming an interruption of the interruption. Verse 33. The woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. Now, the woman comes forward partly because she knows that she had broken social protocol. She had touched him. But in the words of the original language, when you look at this in the original Greek, the words used here actually convey awe and wonder. She understands that a great miracle has taken place. And so she's also filled with gratitude. She's also filled with this awe and wonder that she's been healed. And she's now overwhelmed with who Jesus is. I want you to catch this for a minute. In the middle of this crowd, pressing around Jesus, many of them demanding him for a sign, this woman, according to these words here, the fear and trembling, when you look at it in the original language, she's having a moment. She is having a come to Jesus moment. She's experiencing something in the kingdom, in the spirit realm with Jesus that the rest of the crowd around here is not experiencing, is not feeling or understanding. Why? because she expressed radical faith and reached out and touched him against all the social protocol, against all the social norms in faith, while the rest of the crowd stood around watching. You see, it actually illustrates for us a principle in the kingdom. Awe and wonder often follow bold acts and expressions of faith. Verse 34. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." Do you see, Jesus now leans into this interruption. Again, this is the interruption of the interruption. He could have pressed on, but he leans into the interruption. And he starts by calling her daughter, giving her back her right identity. It's probably been a very long time since anyone has addressed her with such affection and endearment. Her condition with a constant flow of blood would have been similar to someone with leprosy. In this day, if you had leprosy, you literally had to call out loudly, "Leper, leper, leper," so that everyone around you could get out of the way. And as a leper, you were forced to live outside of the community, outside of the city walls. Her condition would have been similar. She would have been scorned. And yet Jesus turns to her and he calls her daughter. He restores her identity, something that probably hasn't happened for her in a very long time. Then it says it was her own faith that healed her. He says, "Your faith has healed you." Again, it's a very affirming statement. He's stating what was right about her and not what was wrong about her. She acted while others stood around and waited, and Jesus is affirming her faith in front of everybody. But then what's interesting to know here, he says that your faith has healed you, but this verb, to healed in the Greek, can also mean to be saved. One of the things that's interesting about Jesus, as you study all of the Gospels in the original languages, he uses the verbs to be healed and to be saved interchangeably. At times in the Gospels when you would think he would say you are healed, he says you are saved. And at times when you think he would say you are saved, he says you are healed. Here he says you are healed, but the word also means to be saved. Jesus announces her healing, but he does it in a way that also reaffirms the condition of her soul. He says you are saved as well. Then Jesus offers her a blessing and assurance that her suffering has ended, something the doctors could never do. "You are well, woman." Words that she had wanted to hear from the doctors for years, but they could never say. Then he gives her this little statement that says, "Go in peace." It was a common Jewish farewell. But the way it's structured here in this passage, it also means to restore right relationship to God. So she's been physically healed, and he says you are healed, using a word that can also mean you are saved, and then he says go in peace in a way that means you are set right. Do you see this? He's not only healed her, he's made sure that her spirit, her soul, is right as well. And then he says, "You are freed from your suffering." And he says it in a way that seems to imply something else was at work in her sickness. But do you see how in these few little words that Jesus took the time, he leaned into this interruption to give this woman not only physical healing, but new identity. She has new identity. She's now known as a daughter of God who's right with God. And remember, all of this took place within the context of not just an interruption, but an interruption of an interruption. Think about how annoyed we tend to get with interruptions. Well, all right, maybe at least me. But we tend to get annoyed with interruptions, don't we? And yet Jesus seems to really enjoy this interruption. In fact, as I looked at other interruption scenes in the Gospels, he always seems to enjoy the interruption. And it certainly becomes a kingdom moment, doesn't it? Verse 35. Forgot to give you the notes on that one. Verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, said, "Your daughter is dead." They said, "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Suddenly, Jesus' attention is brought back to his first interruption. And the cost of Jesus giving in to the second interruption is the life of Jairus' daughter. Do you see how costly this interruption was? Can you imagine what Jairus might have been feeling right now? He might be thinking to himself, "This woman has been sick for 12 years already, and her condition isn't life-threatening. And now my 12-year-old daughter is dead." Verse 36. Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Jesus assures them that he's still coming. He hasn't lost sight of Jairus' request. He's still coming. Both lives matter. One wasn't more important than the other. Jesus is not worried, and he's not anxious about this situation. He keeps a kingdom perspective. The second interruption won't keep Jairus from getting the kingdom breakthrough that he needs. So now, I want to stop and reflect on this and look at how did Jesus respond? How did he respond to these interruptions? And then how can we respond to these interruptions in life, in this great interruption that we're living in? The first thing I see in this is that Jesus was people-centered. As I looked at several other of the interruption stories in the Gospels, he was very people-centered. He never seemed the least bit annoyed by the interruption, by the people. In fact, Jesus also gave people who interrupted him his undivided attention. In some stories, it said he looked at them. He looked at them. That must have meant a lot to them if they had been socially distanced. Think about it. Right now, if you go to the grocery store in the middle of this pandemic, people won't even make eye contact with you anymore. And yet it says Jesus looked at them. Here in this story, he used the very endearing term, "Daughter. Daughter, you have been made well." Jesus never focuses on the material, and he never focuses on the clock or the time. He never says, "Look, we have to get going here." In fact, when Lazarus died, he waited 2 days to go. Jesus always responded to interruptions by being people-centered. The second thing I see here is Jesus addressed suffering and hardship. He acknowledged their pain and suffering. The culture of the day would have been to shun the woman, ostracize her, scorn her, push her away. And yet Jesus says, "Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." He didn't deny or diminish her suffering. He just said that it was over. And as I looked at other interruption stories, he always has a similar response. He acknowledges the suffering. He acknowledges the pain. He doesn't diminish it. He just makes it go away. Number three, Jesus brought about the fullness of the kingdom. He brought the fullness of the kingdom to bear in each interruption story. The kingdom is also a kingdom of love. Jesus took time to seek this woman out when the rest of the crowd would have wanted her to go away. Jesus affirmed the woman by calling her daughter and blessing her. There was no blame and there was no shame. We see that in other gospel stories where the Pharisees try to introduce an element of shame. Whose sin caused this illness? Or what should we do with this sinner? Jesus doesn't do that. He simply reaffirmed her. The healing was the easy part. Do you see that? The healing of the woman's flow of blood was the easy part. Jesus' primary concern was to bring about the fullness of the kingdom for this woman so she could experience the love, the care, and the affirmation that also comes with the kingdom of God. The healing of her spirit, so to speak. The physical healing, again, was the easy part. The damage that had happened to her soul, to her spirit, from years and years of scorn, that was the more difficult thing. That was the part that Jesus wanted to deal with. He wanted to bring the fullness of the kingdom to bear in her situation. Number four, he trusted the Father's timing. Jesus was always willing to stop. He was never in a hurry, and he was never in a hurry to get away. He spent time, even when he knew that there would be an earthly cost elsewhere, in the case of Jairus' daughter. He knew the Father was in control. But more importantly, as he understood the Father's timing, as he trusted the Father's timing, he also understood his kingdom authority within that. If an earthly delay caused a death, he knew that his authority could push back the effects of time and bring that child back to life. So Jesus could be okay with the interruptions because he trusted the Father and the power of the kingdom for the timing of all of it. Number five, Jesus was also concerned with the condition of their soul. And this ties into my number three point where he brought the fullness of the kingdom. But the whole reason Jesus stops was to make sure that the woman was okay spiritually. He already knew that she had been healed. When he sensed the power go out from his body, he knew that she was physically healed. He could have just continued on his way and been, okay, great. Someone's healed, let's go to Jairus' house. But he stopped because he was more concerned about the condition of her soul. He wanted to know that she was well inside. And so he stopped to bless her and affirm her. The sixth thing I see, Jesus points out the faith of the people in the interruption. In this story and in other interruption stories I looked at in the Gospels, Jesus pointed out and praised their faith. Jesus liked these kinds of interruptions because there was a pure faith with these kinds of people. There was a genuineness to the faith of the people who would interrupt Jesus. Real quickly, I want to share a story on this, and then I have a seventh point that's not in the notes. Years and years and years ago, I used to do evangelism for a men's organization called Promise Keepers. I don't know if anybody even remembers Promise Keepers anymore. But I had gone up to, I believe it was Milwaukee, to be a part of the evangelism team up there. But we had gotten caught in the crush of traffic trying to get to the stadium, and we were quite late. So I get in, and they give me my evangelism shirt. It was this bright blue shirt with a big EV on the front of it, evangelism. And then I got my assignment, my placing, and they put me in the upper balcony of the stadium. And I was really disappointed. I thought that the action would be down front by the altar. And so I had a bit of a bad attitude as I took my place in the upper balcony. But the Lord had taught me an important lesson that day. Because the speaker that night gave an altar call. And of course, there was a bunch of people that went down front. And I'm standing there in the balcony. Then he gives a second altar call. And a bunch more people go down front. And I'm standing there in the balcony. And I can't remember. He might have even done a third altar call. And people went down front. And I'm standing in the balcony. And then he does one more altar call. And he says, okay, there's a bunch more people here. And you're really desperate for Jesus. But you haven't come down front. Because you're the ones that are really hungry. You're the ones that really want to know Jesus. And he goes, guess what? There's good news for you. Look around you. There's somebody standing right near you with a shirt that says EV. Go to them and they'll help you find Jesus. I was immediately swarmed with a crowd of people, literally pulling on my shirt, wanting me to pray with them to accept Jesus. You see, the ones that went down front, maybe they'd already been there once before. I don't know. But the ones who held back in the balcony and didn't decide to go forward until that last altar call, they were the ones that had real, desperate, hungry faith. It looks a little different in these gospel stories. These people are actually pressing through the crowd to get to Jesus, but they're doing something that the others haven't done. And then number seven, the final thing that I see here that is not in the notes. He restored the identity of the people he encounters in the interruptions. He restores the identity of the people. He restores them from sick to healthy. Daughter, you are well. He restores them from lost to saved. Go in peace. You've been restored to God. He gave them back their proper identity that sickness or sin or whatever had taken away from them from the culture of the day. God didn't take their identity, but the way the culture responded to their sickness or the way the culture responded to their sin had taken away their identity. And Jesus restores their identity in front of a crowd. And as I thought about this, I thought, man, this is something that we, the church, really need to be about all the time. All the time we need to be restoring people's identity. But especially in this coronavirus pandemic, especially as we may encounter people who either had the disease or are recovering from the disease, we have to make sure that they get their identity restored and they don't just become known as a COVID-19 victim. That would be a horrible way to live. And I want to end with this side note. It's okay for us to interrupt Jesus. It's okay for us to interrupt Jesus. The woman in the crowd interrupts Jesus and he doesn't mind a bit. Oftentimes I find people don't want to bother Jesus with their troubles. Oh, you know, it's no big deal. I don't want to. Jesus delights in the interruption because you're not an interruption. You're a daughter. You're a son. You're part of his creation. He delights when you come and tug at the hem of his garment and say, Jesus, I need help. Or Jesus, I need identity. Or Jesus, I just want to be with you. Whatever it is, he delights when we come and we tug on his garment. It might feel like an interruption to us, but it's never an interruption to Jesus. All lives and all suffering matter to Jesus. One life is not more important, and some suffering is not greater or lesser to Jesus in any way. Come to Jesus. Don't feel like you're an interruption. Now, I want to wrap up with just a few thoughts here. In fact, I'll just turn that off. I think Jesus is inviting us to have the same kind of response to interruption. Both the interruptions of everyday life and this great interruption that we're living in now in this coronavirus. We are in a time when many people, not all, have been slowed down, so it's easier to pay attention to the interruptions. Maybe Jesus is even forcing us to come down a little bit so we can notice the interruptions. Who are the people around us who are not an interruption but a kingdom breakthrough waiting to happen? Who are the people around us who are a kingdom breakthrough waiting to happen? People often ask me, how come I don't see more miracles? My answer is usually twofold. One, we don't take the time. We don't allow the interruption. When we slow down and allow ourselves to lean into the interruption like Jesus did, I believe we'll see more miracles and more signs and wonders. And then the other reason that we don't see more miracles is we get anxious. And right now in this COVID-19 world that we're living in, this great interruption, boy, anxiousness is at an all-time high. Again, if you have to go into a grocery store to pick something up, you can just sense the anxiousness in the environment. So how will we, the church, respond to the great interruption? And what can we do during this great interruption to still obey social distancing? We don't want to be stupid. We don't want to put ourselves and others at risk. But I think there are things that we can do where we think outside of the box and we can press into responding to this interruption the way Jesus would. One of the things that has always kind of afflicted the American church is that there's just a few people up on stage, and then there's a congregation that sits. And this great interruption that we're in, this COVID-19 season, has only exacerbated that. There's Amy and I and Carlene here in an empty building, and everyone is sitting at home. And that's happening around the world, in churches all over. I think we need to think outside of the box. I think we need to think about some ways that we can lean into this interruption of COVID-19 and still do the works and the ministry of Jesus. And I have a few crazy ideas. You all should be afraid. One of the things that we're working on is Aaron and I are working on a project. We'll hopefully have it wrapped up here in a couple of days. We are purchasing a keyword associated with a short code. What that means is we're going to purchase the little phrase, pray the number for me. Pray for me. And people can simply text pray for me to 797979. It's the same code that you text us to if you want to join our mailing list. But they're going to be able to text. Don't do it yet. It's not set up yet. Don't try it today. We'll let you know when you can try it. But you'll be able to text pray, the number four, me, pray for me to 797979, and then we'll get those prayer requests into the church. And I'm not going to pray for them. You are. Right where you're at home, I will send you all of these prayer requests so that you can begin to pray for these people. And one of the ways we're going to do this is on next Sunday, we're going to get some volunteers to come to the church, and we're going to have some signs, and you're going to stand at a very socially distant, safe place. We're going to hold up big signs that say, text, pray for me to 797979. Kind of like what we did with the palms, but we'll just be holding up signs, and again, we'll be spaced apart. We won't interact with anybody. But people driving by, it'll be really easy to see, like, what? Pray for me. That's all I got to do. I just text that. And then you, the church, you will begin to reach out and pray for these people. Lean into the interruption. We're sitting at home right now. Our schedules are a little bit different. And there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of needs right now. And so you're going to be able to pray for those people and those needs. Amen? Just nod your head and pretend like you're excited even if you're not. But we're also going to do a few other things. Next Sunday, we will not have an online service. But next Sunday, we will do a few additional prayer exercises. Again, socially distanced. We're going to do church in the parking lot. We'll have a thing in the parking lot here at church. Everyone will remain safe. You can wear your mask. We'll keep everyone separated. We'll do it to the highest standards of safety, but we'll be able to at least see each other a little bit, but engage in some ministry where we're leaning into this interruption and helping, to bless others and to bless our church and to bless the people in our church. But as I wrap up, I would encourage you, spend a little time also, how can you personally lean into this season of interruption that we're in? And begin to minister to some people in a way that fits in with our social distancing requirements. Can you do it online? Do you know people online that could use a Zoom call or a phone call or a FaceTime or some prayer or send them a gift in the mail or do a ding-dong ditch? Amy and I did a ding-dong ditch last night. We just took a little gift over to somebody's house, rang the doorbell, left it on their porch, and waved from the car in the driveway. But what are some ways that we can lean into being the church and following Jesus' example of leaning into interruption? Amen? All right. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up for our last song, and then we'll have a time of prayer.